Fact session number 17623, Henry Watson, Reel 5.
Reel 5. You just got to Durban and I was asking you about the reception that you got. Do you recall it?
Yes. I can't remember the name of the people now, but as you stepped off the shore, they were just coming to say, would you like to come and have a meal with us? I'd like to come up to our house. And we were made very, very welcome. Very welcome. So I showed him how to polish his, spit and polish his boots. He was in the sort of like a home guard that they had.
Were these English South Africans?
Yes.
Did you see much or many signs of what became known as apartheid, but the way that they treat the blacks?
Well, just on the dock side, they had a gang of Negroes that were prisoners, and they were all chained, and the overseers were not the most gentle of people with them. I thought to myself, oof, rough.
How long were you in Durban?
I think it was just in two or three days at the most. I know we were arranged to go and meet these people again at a certain time, but on a certain day, but by the time that came around, we were on the way.
Then you would sail up the Red Sea?
Yes.
What was that like? It's pretty warm in that area.
Well, we stopped at the bottom of the Red Sea, where would that be? Gulf of Aqaba. And we stopped there.
Aden, was it? Aden.
That's right, that's where it was.
Was there a problem at Aden where the men had been told they were going ashore and it was cancelled and the officers went and that caused a bit of a...
That happened at on the west coast of Africa, the first place we put in, Freetown. Some of the officers went ashore and there was a little bit of annoyance, to say the least. In fact, there's one or two bits of fire irons got dropped through one or two little bits of boats that were pestering, you know, wanting to sell us stuff. But the only trouble that I can remember at Aden is the OC troop ships, Lieutenant Colonel English, I believe his name was, in rank, he died, and they put his body ashore at Aden. And it was a bit horrendous watching it, trying to get the boat onto a lighter, because the swell, there was such a high swell. There's times when he was almost on the boat, on the lighter, and then they went up again, and maybe an 8 foot, or it went down, there was about a 7 or 8 foot gap between the bottom of the coffin and the boat. And then we had to wait till the swell came up again. They messed on quite a bit before they got it timed right, and they put them off there.
Then you'd reach Egypt. Do you know where you made your first stop in Egypt?
Well, we were at the bottom end of the Red Sea at Aden. And we travelled up during the day, or travelled up at night, to disembark.
What were your first impressions of Egypt?
We didn't disembark, though. We travelled back. We travelled up and down for a week. Before we put in. And then when we did put in, the flagship of the convoy, the Georgic, she'd been bombed and she was beached, and in the local paper said that the Admiralty regretted to announce the slight damage had been sustained by the SS Georgic. And that was just slight damage, but it was about a burnt out hulk. I think they towed it back to England later on and more or less rebuilt it.
What was your first impressions of Egypt?
Hot, stinking. Didn't like it. Didn't like the heat, I didn't like the smell.
Do you know where you went to when you got off from the canal?
No, I went up to Tewfik. Ismailia, sorry, not Tewfik, Ismailia. We went inland just a little distance and into a camp there.
Was this a tented camp?
Tented camp, uh-huh.
What were the conditions like there for you?
Well, there was nothing to do. Just a little bit of running around, chasing like a lot of silly bees.
Getting some exercise in so that, after being at sea so long.
Oh, they kept them moving. I don't know. I can't remember what I did there.
Was there any early problems like jippy tummy, which
started straight away, yes. You were warned not to drink the water and not to buy melons off the fellas that were selling them, as they'd been pumped up with water out of the Sweetwater Canal, which is a non-starter for name anyway.
And you're saying you personally were doing very little?
I wasn't doing much there at all, no.
But you weren't there long, were you?
No.
Where did you go to then? This would be July of 1941. Where did you go to
Cyprus.
Then? To Cyprus.
Across to Cyprus.
Do you recall the journey to Cyprus?
Aye, the destroyers took the lads all across. And I think it took them 8 hours, I think, to get from from Egypt to Cyprus, and I was left behind with the transport, and we loaded the transport onto an old collier. The name of it was Kelvin Bank, and with a wee light ship, just a few trucks in, it was a little bit bumpy and filthy. Coal dust everywhere, and it took us 2.5 days to reach Cyprus. So
you'd be under escort, though, were you?
No, just on our own.
And no interference from the air by the enemy at all.
No, because you're right at the top end of the Med.
You pull into Famagusta.
Put in there, yes.
What were your first impressions of Cyprus? After coming from Egypt?
Not a lot of difference, I thought, at the time.
Obviously, you would get ashore. What happened to you then?
Well, one of the first things, we got up into Famagusta, a little village. And I had a look round, and the thing that appealed to me was that they were selling grapes. And staphylis, they called them. And you could get your topi filled with them for one piastre, which was equivalent of about 3 halfpence old money in English money. And I enjoyed them so much so that I don't touch another one. Because, my goodness, if I ate one, I was doing even time up to the nearest toilet. It goes straight through.
Because this was fruit we hadn't seen for years, or some years anyway. What was the battalion doing?
Well, they split up immediately and went to their different sites. We went to a place, went through Nicosia, to a place called Keto Lakatamia. Don't ask me why I can remember that name, but I can. There was two names, Cato Lacatambia and Pano Lacatambia. And the units were spread around all over the place, the different companies.
And what was your role there?
Same again, look after the transport.
Keeping it moving.
Keeping it running.
Were any Cypriot civilians working with you?
Not that I can recall.
Did you get into Nicosia, into the
Occasionally, I got in. But it wasn't my theme at all.
What are your memories of your stay in Cyprus, which was something like 3 months?
Well, I suspect a tiny bit of time in the water. There were some tanks in an orchard full of water. I used to dive in, swim a boat in them. That's where I leisure time spent, swimming a boat in the tanks.
Did you stay in the one place that you've mentioned, or at some point did you move to another area?
No, we stayed there all the time until we moved out.
Were you told why you were there?
No. You're not told anything in the army. At least you weren't told anything in the army. You just do what you're told. That's it.
Did you get much opportunity to, to meet the Cypriot people?
We had a run of trouble with the Fordson pickups. I don't know why, but they were very prone to breaking the kingpins in the steering. Because when the kingpin broke, the wheel just fell off. Came down onto the spring and just slid along the bottom. Invariably, you tore the brake pipe off. So that was the end of that brake on that side, even if you got it put back. And you just couldn't... I got all the LED... used a lot, and I used quite a few kingpins, hubs. There was no more to get, and then we used to go down into Cyprus with little forms for impressed stuff and see if we could get anything. We cleaned them out of kingpins and bushes and hubs. Used to snap the kingpins and snap the hoops, the stub right off. Just the way the roads were made, I think.
Did they enjoy having their parts taken?
No, I don't think they enjoyed that one little bit. Not by the attitude. They said it left them nothing to work on. We're taking their knives, forks and spoons away from them.
Was mail coming to you all right on Cyprus?
Was
mail? Mail from home?
To the best of my knowledge, yes.
You'd be censored, were you? Your own mail, was it censored?
Oh, I'm censored both ways. You could still get a little bit of a wrinkle through to them here and there, you know.
Any other memories of Cyprus?
Memories of Cyprus... To me, I was just about ashamed to call myself British, because it was a British holding. I think Britain had taken everything they could possibly get from them, the fruit, the copper mines, anything that was worth anything, England got, and they just literally put damn all back in. Nothing. No, it was a very poor setup. It was a bad advert for Britain. I don't know whether you've heard this before, but that's the way it was to me.
So was that because they were basically living a life almost of poverty, whilst there was all this raw materials and that being taken out the island to?
Yeah.
Did it show in their attitude towards you?
Well, I don't know how many units had been there before us, but we just more or less ignored us.
So there wasn't much opportunity for a soldier and young lady of the, no. of the area to meet.
Oh, there was. If you go down in the... I forget the name of the damn places now. Which I didn't bother with.
That must have caused its troubles. Was VD rife in the amongst the companies?
Oh, there was quite a bit of it, because one of the lads in Parsons Barracks Aldershot, he's a Newcastle lad I got very friendly with, and he got sent to the CMPs, and he was corporal, and he had pretty much a free hand, so as I had. And I sometimes used to go down with the mail or with a postman to collect the mail, and that was in their quarters where he collected it. And there was a medical officer had a parade of ladies of mixed repute that was for there for an inspection every Monday morning or something. And then there was, every now and again, there was, you heard of this one, that one, the other one being sent out with the VD.
I know it didn't come into your own life, but what was the army attitude towards men catching VD?
Well, it was a self-inflicted wound, really. Because there was, in the MI room, there was provision made for you. And you're supposed to sign the book. Well, if you took this tube of, I don't know what it was, and the condoms, you signed for them. I couldn't actually tell you, I was never ever in.
Were there any signs at that time of problems between Turkish and Greek Cypriots?
No, I wouldn't say so. There was Greeks and there was Turks and that all around the area where we were. No, it was before the flare-up.
You were there about 3 months, and around at the November of 41, you set off again. Where did you go?
To Palestine, Haifa. Was it Haifa? Aye.
And when you got there, must have been a busy time for you, because didn't you take over some Indian
transport? You took over the Indians got our stuff on the Cyprus side, and you had to go through it with them and show them what you had and check it off on the sheet. And when we went across there, their stuff was all in a yard. Get on with it.
And what condition was it in?
Pretty rough.
Do you recall that particular time when you were having to work on this transport?
Yeah.
What were the problems that you were having to...
Well, one of the worst problems that I found was if you were the Bren carrier. I discovered this at the... I think it was in Cyprus. No, it wasn't, it was there. One of the problems with a Bren carrier is that if learner drivers... I've got nothing against anyone learning to drive... The Bren carrier was a very high revving engine, the Ford's, the V8, is very high revving in a low gear. I mean, you were fairly screaming if you were wanting 40 out on the best of roads, but more often than not you were doing 20. And when you were losing power, when you were going to change it on from top to third, you had to rev this engine up to screeching point at about 20 miles an hour before you could get nicked through into third. Well, what happened, they used to try and bang, 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 bang it through, and then all of a sudden there was no drive there. You could get bottom and third, or you could get second and top. but you couldn't get the other ones. What was the reason? The reason was that when they tried to hammer through, they used the selector for about 7 or 8 inches long, this like a phosphor bronze. They used to slam it in, try and get it in, and it was such a terrific leverage that it bent the fork and pulled the gear back, the sliding gear. And of course, when you try to get it into that top gear, it just wouldn't go. So you had to sort out what was wrong with that. Well, I know for a fact from workshop, the workshops got a lot of them in, but never got any of mine. I had them, but that was the first place I took a one off. I took the, stripped the gearbox out when we took delivery of them. Just worked on it there, and I found out what was wrong. Haven't had gearboxes to bits of my own at home, civil life, that I knew what made them tick. And sure enough, here's the old selector fork then. So I had to take the fork out and try and tap it straight again. Well, it's very much up the crack and fall to bits on you, but I managed each time. But I know there's a lot of them went to workshops because the LED just didn't know how.
And the trucks themselves, were they relatively old trucks with high mileage that you took over?
A lot of it was Canadian 1500 weights. They were very fast things. They couldn't half shift. There was only one I had any real trouble with, and used to be constantly breaking spring leaves. And I pulled in at an Indian unit on my way up, on the way, going farther up. And I asked if they had any spare leaves, and the MT sergeant there said, no, give it to him. It was an Indian. And he sat down on his hunkers, and he did something that I'd never seen done before. He had a bottle of acetylene and oxygen, and he sat down and he welded that spring leaf. And well, that's a waste of time. It'll take us longer to put on than what it'll last. I'd never ever seen it done successfully. But with the top of Iraq, the way down, the way up the Blue, the Tobruk area, until the penny dropped. The CMP said it belonged to them, and they took it away. And it was still running with that welded leaf. Never hit another bit of bother with it. But that was the exception rather than the rule.
Was the problem with this transport that it had been driven badly, or just time and distance?
Well, I think mileage. That was all just mileage, really.
You wouldn't have a lot of time to get it prepared before you had to move up into Iraq.
No. Most of the time was spent finding a way into the orchard where the trucks were parked.
What was this, camouflage?
No, after the oranges. And all the MT went out en masse. Seek the oranges. So we found out how to get in, so we'd go down that night in the dark. The trucks were parked about half a mile away from the camp, so we'd all sneaked out the camp and away down to get for oranges. Found the hole in the wall and away through, and big lush ones, you know, hanging on the trees. We filled sandbags to look at all the, and put them in the trucks, you see. Next morning, fetched the lads out onto parade. The first morning they were ever there, like a shot. MT, right, we marched away down. We're going to have a right good feed of oranges. We'd been in the wrong end. We've got flaming grapefruit instead. Everybody had sackfuls of grapefruit. So we had to go back again the next night. Managed all right the next night. And the daftest thing about it was, on the roadside. There was tons just tipped out for anybody that wanted them. But of course, they weren't as sweet as the ones that we picked off the tree. That's what they say, the grass is greener on the other side.
Can we look at the journey from Palestine up through Transjordan and up to Iraq? What are your memories of that journey?
Well, the first thing, I'll never forget it, was we're going along, we'd set away from where we were stationed on the road. And I got in behind the queue again. I got left a little bit too far, and I wasn't sure where I was going. So a lad called Tommy Hutton, he was a good lad, a very religious lad. And just for the hell of it, I saw this woman in Western dress. So I pulled up, I says, and ask that woman where we are, Tommy. You know, I think that she would be an Arab. And Tommy got the biggest dressing down of his life off her. She wanted to know where was, did he not read the Bible? And we got a load of guff. She says, this is Nazareth. Place Jesus was born or something in it, you know. She started giving him a dose of the Bible. Well, Tommy was most embarrassed because that was his pet theme. Anyway, that got us out of that. The
so your friend got his telling off.
Well, that was the end of that. Of course, us were set away, hopefully, with the instructions of where, follow which road to where, and was carried on until we came down the Jordan, the River Jordan, and then we went up the pass. My God. Hairpin bends. It was a pretty horrendous, but the old truck we had was boiling its head off at the time we got to the top. But we stopped and had a brew up after that. And it was just a little way along there that we met, when we pulled up in the desert, nothing to be seen anywhere. We hadn't hardly stopped in this. Up popped two Arabs, and got the photos taken. The next thing of any importance was the first overnight camp we had in the desert. The next morning, when they were pulling out, I don't know where they all came from, but there was dozens of Arabs there with their dogs. And the dogs were sniffed around looking for the toilet holes. As soon as the unit pulled out, we were still in the on the site. The Arabs were there with their dogs and digging the toilet holes back out just to get the bits of bully beef and tinned fish that was part of the menu. And I don't know where they all came from. They vanished. I don't know where they all went to. There was nothing around the boat. There was nothing to be seen. So whether they're living in a hole with a cover over or what, I don't know. The next thing of any importance was we pulled in at Habania, but they wouldn't let us stop there. They kept us going. And the next thing was just outside Baghdad. I was way behind again. And the story of this was Mr. Slate had his head cut with a stone just going into Baghdad, and the word came back over the Sea of Peace, passing it back, go through with the rifles at the ready. It's just a sure force. And that was the place I saw the finest kick up the backside I've ever seen. I'll never forget it. We were going through, and in front of us, about 50 yards in front, well, 25 yards in front of us, I saw an Arab bending slowly. It seemed to be in slow motion, going down to pick up a stone big as a cricket ball. And he's going to pick this cricket ball up. There's a stone. Well, about as far back again from behind him was a policeman with a navy blue tunic, riding breeches, putties. and he's sitting heavy boots and a stick. And he saw this walk going down, so he set off running. Well, he was doing a fair rate of knots by the time he got to this bloke. And by that time, he was just kind of tightening up at the back end to pick the stone up when he hit him with it. And that fella shot up in the air and did a complete somersault. And that was the finest kick of the backside I'd ever seen. I'll never forget it.